Welcome to Banfield. The search for Gabby Petito tragically appears to be over, while the hunt for her fiancé has only intensified. For the man who just might have all the answers, well, no one has seen him for weeks, or if you believe his parents, since September 14th. That was 5 days before Gabby's body was discovered in the wilderness in Wyoming. But even if you don't live in either Florida or Wyoming, you could have information about the case and not even know it. Here's the reason. This case goes back several weeks and it covers several states. Here's why. August 12th, police are called to that now infamous fight between Gabby Petito and Brian Laundry in Moab, Utah. The 911 caller said he saw Brian hitting Gabby, but the officers who responded to the incident listed Gabby as the suspect and Brian as the witness. The week after that incident, we know almost nothing about the couple's movements. No social media posts or sightings until August 24th. Gabby and Brian are seen together checking out of a hotel in Salt Lake City. The following day, August 25th, there's a final social media post on Gabby's Instagram account with photos taken in Ogden, Utah. That's also the last day that Gabby's mother says she talked to her daughter on FaceTime. Gabby told her mom that she and Brian were in Grand Teton National Park. 2 days later, August 27th, Gabby's mother receives a strange text from her daughter's phone that reads, "Can you help Stan? I just keep getting his voicemails and missed calls." Curious, because Gabby's mom is very suspicious of this text. It's about Gabby's grandfather, and Gabby calls her grandfather Grandpa. She does not call him Stan. That very same day, August 27th, about 6 p.m., look at this picture. A YouTuber called Red, White, and Bethune captures this image of a van with Florida plates that looks a lot like Gabby and Brian's. It was parked near that Spread Creek dispersed camping area in Grand Teton. And yes, that is where Gabby's body would be found 3 weeks later. On August 29th, 2 days later, a TikToker named Miranda Baker picks up a hitchhiker who she says really resembles Brian Laundry. She says he offered her $200 to drive him 10 miles. She says when he found out that she was going to Jackson Hole, Wyoming, he got agitated and he wanted out of her vehicle and fast. That next day, August 30th, Gabby's mother gets a very strange text again from her daughter's phone. This time it reads, "Just this, no service in Yosemite." Sadly, we know that Gabby never made it to Yosemite. 2 days after that, September 1st, a license plate reader on the Sumter Boulevard exit off of I-95 spots the van at 10:26 a.m. This is a really important detail because the drive from Wyoming to Florida takes about 35 hours. It is unlikely one person could do that alone. In a single shot, there'd be bathroom breaks, there'd be stops for gas, there'd be food, probably a place to sleep. Someone along that route, maybe you, maybe saw that van, maybe saw Brian, if indeed Brian was the driver at all. Think about it. Did he actually take that van back to Florida? It got back to Florida. Who knows if it was Brian? So now think of all the security cameras along that route. Do you live in one of these states? Do you have a doorbell cam? Do you have cell phone video, security cam video? Maybe you possess this video. Maybe your dash cam on your car might just have that man and or that van captured on your device right now. It's about this time, September 1st, that Gabby's mother gets a really concerned feeling. She's worried now about her daughter because, remember, she hasn't talked to her for about a week, and texts Brian's mom asking if they know anything. Gabby's mom says she gets no response from Mrs. Laundry. Nothing. And that brings us to the day that Gabby's parents officially report her missing, September 11th. It's about that day Brian Laundry's lawyer says he will not be cooperating with any investigation. And then on September 14th, Brian allegedly drives himself in his family's silver Mustang to the Carlton Nature Reserve in Northport, Florida. They say he planned to go for a hike. But when he didn't come back, they got worried. They drove to the park. They left a note on the car. And then that very same day, guess they decided, well, we might as well just bring that Mustang, that silver Mustang, back to our house. Strangely, though, they never called the police to mention, gee, we're worried our son is missing in that alligator-infested park. No, they didn't. It would take another three full days before Brian Laundrie's parents would call up the police and finally just happen to mention that their son has been gone for 4 days. And 2 days later, on September 19th, Gabby Petito's body is found in Wyoming. And the following day, September 20th, Brian Laundrie's home, his family home, is declared a crime scene, and it is descended upon by 24 FBI agents that storm the place and remove a hard drive and dozens of boxes of other evidence, and they tow that silver Mustang. There are a lot, it's fair to say, of moving parts in this story, a story that covers thousands of miles, so you can see how important it is for people across the country to check your cameras, look at those photos, try to remember anything that you might have seen to help bring justice to Gabby Petito. I'm joined by News Nation's Brian Etten, who is outside the Laundrie family home. Brian, as if I didn't think there were so many disturbing details in this story involving the Laundries and their son, yet another one has surfaced today regarding the Laundries packing up that camper van about a week after he supposedly returned. Walk me through this latest development.
Yeah, this is very, very strange, and I did not see this one coming, Ashley. The neighbors who live direct... First of all, let me sort of show you the area. Here you've got the Laundrie's house behind me with this red pickup truck and the camper van. The neighbors who live across the street in this house right here, you see the flickering light right there on the front porch. Those neighbors today, for the first time, said that a week and a half ago, they saw the Laundries, the mom, the dad, and the son, Brian Laundrie, all packing up this camper van right here, this camper that goes on the back of this truck, and that they went away for a weekend to go camping. All of this while the search was happening for Gabby Petito after Gabby Petito had been reported missing, Ashley.
So this neighbor across the street is only just today saying this? Do we know if they said it to the FBI quietly another day, quite some time ago, that would have shed a lot of light on where the Laundries have been and where Brian Laundrie has been?
It is peculiar, Ashley. I don't know if you saw the full interview. They would only talk to Fox News. We've tried to talk to them, as have other outlets, and they've told us they won't talk to anyone else right now. But it was a strange interview because we've all been out here for more than a week now. I've actually talked to those neighbors before, and as have other media, and it was interesting that just today this story is coming out, but they did say that they told the police about it. I texted with Northport Police earlier today. I said, can you confirm that you were told about this story? And I got just a no response.
Oh, no response. Okay, they wouldn't confirm or deny one way or the other. Okay,
they wouldn't confirm or
very
deny.
Importantly. All right, so the house behind you, have you seen any more law enforcement show up other than the ones that are out in front protecting that crime scene from, whoever might come by? But any lawyers or anybody else coming in to talk to the Laundries?
Nothing. There has been no movement today all day. Other days, the dad would come out to check the mail or something like that. Nothing has happened today. It's just been totally quiet. Truck's been in the same place. Lights come on at night, but there's no lights coming out from any of the blinds. And it's just quiet out here. And they're still not coming out, not talking, not giving any more information to police.
And that room behind you, over your left shoulder there, that last night we determined could be Brian Laundrie's room, that room is never lit up with lights either, right?
No. I mean, I think I mentioned it to you the other night. There's lights on outside, so you can't tell. But the strange thing is there's never any lights coming from the house at all. It's like the people live in the dark. It's very, very strange. But we know they're in there because we're here and our colleagues are here and they haven't come out.
Okay, so Brian, here's the real question. And, our team has been trying to figure out, any possible theories on this since you were there, since you got there. These parents said to the police on Friday, our son's been gone since Tuesday. That's a week ago yesterday. That's 8 days. So theoretically, these parents think that their son has been missing for 8 days. Have they ever once come out to appeal to the public? Help us find our missing son. My God, he's in an alligator infested swamp. Help us, someone, please. If you've seen Brian, here's his picture. Help us. Has there been anything close to an appeal to find him.
Absolutely not. They've never even come out of the house and they've never even spoken to anyone. Again, the only time we see them is when they come to check their mail. I spent the whole day over at the wildlife reserve and what you just said occurred to me too. Gosh, we're all out here. The media is all out here. The police, they've got law enforcement from around the entire state, a dive team in there today, searching this massive reserve. Everybody's trying to find Brian Laundrie, but like, where are the parents? Wouldn't they come out?
Aren't they worried about their poor son who they say went hiking and then just didn't come home and they left a note saying, call us? I mean, the Petito family was appealing to all of America, help us find Gabby, and not a word from, I mean, it just doesn't sound like parents who are really worried about their son missing. I mean, it just doesn't square. Real quickly, the public, you, me, we all seem a lot more angry about this than the Laundries do. Have they come back, those protesters, now that they know that Gabby did not live, she didn't survive, that it's a homicide? Have those protesters returned because they were steaming mad when she was missing?
Well, the thing is, they can't return, Ashley, and that's because if you look down the street here, you see that headlight all the way down the street. That is a Northport police officer. There's one on that end of the street, and there's one on the other end of the street that you can't see because it's kind of around the bend. But they are not allowing anyone on the street unless you're a member of the media or you live on the street. So that's pretty much cut off the protest from in front of the house. There is a memorial at Northport Town Hall, which is a short drive from here. That has sort of become the gathering place for people who want to remember Gabby, but they've essentially just shut out the protesters from the street.
And even way down the block, they didn't decide just to, you know, gather as close as they could to shout as loud as they could. Nobody has returned because the police have effectively made it impossible.
Exactly. That's exactly what's happening.
Mm. Brian, you're doing just such a great job. Thank you for that. And let us know the minute you see something else happen out there. We're going to keep you, you know, on standby as well. Brian, thank you. Brian Enten reporting in Northport for us. Just doing such an amazing job on this. I want you to be sure to catch Brian tomorrow night for a special in-depth look of this case that will cover all of the angles from Gabby's disappearance to the manhunt for her fiancé. That's tomorrow night, 9 Eastern, 8 Central, right here on News Nation. And after the break, a man who has helped to collar some of the top fugitives this country has ever had. John Walsh is here with his plan to find Brian Laundrie. Welcome back to our special coverage of the Gabby Petito homicide investigation and the hunt for her fiancé, Brian Laundrie. It is across the country. I am joined now by someone who knows all about cross-country manhunts. John Walsh and his team have collared some of the top fugitives this country's ever had. He's assisted in solving the Elizabeth Smart case. He helped track down that family annihilator, John List. He helped bring down child pornographer Eric Rosser all the way in Thailand. He is the host of Investigation Discoveries In Pursuit, and John Walsh is with us now. John, I'm sure that you heard that new reporting. It is alarming, to say the least, that a week after the supposed arrival back in Florida on September 1st of Brian Laundrie, the across-the-street neighbor sees the whole family, Brian and his parents, packing up the camping van and going for a nice little sojourn. They didn't tell the police that because the police have told us they refused to speak to them. What do you make of that?
Talk about strange coincidence. Brian, your reporter, said that he saw that on Fox. I was on Fox waiting to talk to Martha McCallum when the reporter interviewed the couple. And they said that before Gabby went missing, the father and mother went out and bought a new white camper shell for the red pickup truck, and they loaded it up, and they went away for a weekend, and they thought it was odd they were taking their much older son. Usually going a little camper van like that, you take your grandchildren or something. And I'm sitting there listening to it, and Martha McCallum says, John, did you hear that? And I said, that's a bombshell. I've been saying all this time that he wasn't in the house, and nobody was saying it. I said, Martha, let's put this together. He comes back with her van. He's there for several days. Daddy goes out and buys a camper shell. And all of a sudden, mommy and daddy disappear for 3 days, but Brian doesn't come back in the camper shell. Then a couple days later, Gabby's parents file a missing persons report. Now I get in the case at that point. The marshals are saying, John, we think this is a homicide. There's a girl missing. We need you to saddle up. There may be somebody. There's a person of interest. I call him a suspect. So now I'm sitting there on Fox and I'm going, my God, here it is. I was dead right. They dropped him off somewhere. So their wonderful lawyer, last week, you heard it and you said it so well, Ashley, their wonderful Stephen Bertolino and the dirty laundry mom and dad, they call him up and say, on Tuesday, Brian went to the swamp and he left his car there and he goes there all the time, but we're worried. So on Wednesday, we went to the swamp and we left him a note saying, Brian, if you're disturbed and you're going to kill yourself, we'll come and help you. Then they tell, through Bertolino, they tell the cops, well, then we went out and got the car on Thursday, and now it's Friday. We're going to finally do the right thing. Bertolino, and trust me, I believe Bertolino is going to pay for this. He's the spokesperson. He had to know that the parents helped him. He's going to say it's client, you know, privilege and all that other BS. But they're telling the cops, and the cops are buying it. They're buying it again. They added 5 days to his escape. He could be in Guadalajara, Mexico, having a beer now while we're talking about him. He was never in that swamp. They're never going to find him. He's in that swamp. He's out there because he's a narcissistic little creep. He's had so much help from mom and dad. They drove him somewhere. So I'm telling the cops and the marshals and FBI, get the mother and father's phones, find out, triangulate them, where they let use their credit cards. That's where they drop Brian off. Get on the case. I was talking to him today. You got to look at the parents. They dropped him off somewhere. He's not in that swamp. And they're using
credit cards are one thing, right? Credit cards are one thing. But if they drove on roughly September 8th, because the neighbor thinks it's about a week after Brian returns to Florida, which is September 1st. So around September 8th, if they went on a little trip, then there are cameras on almost every street corner. There are surveillance cameras. There are toll cameras. There are highway cameras. There are traffic cameras. We will be able to see where they went. We may actually be able to create a popcorn trail to see where those parents went. But man, if this actually happened, if they did do this, if they spirited away their son, and we're not saying they did, we do not know, but if they did this, that is one of the biggest obstruction of justice and making false statements cases I think I've ever heard.
That's what I'm saying. And I've been saying it since last week. And I'm saying it again. They have to track the parents through the cameras. I don't know if the parents were smart enough to buy burner phones, but I'm sure they bought burner phones for Brian. That's what he's on the run with. And this is my opinion, not this network's opinion, but I've been doing this for 33 years with a real good record. I believe they let him off somewhere, and if they can triangulate where those parents were, where they stopped, that'd be a good start place to look for Brian. And I still asked today, I asked the cops today, okay, tell me why. You didn't have a black and white uniform car in the front yard, front street, not violating any Fifth Amendment of the dirty laundries by talking to them or talking to their creepy son. Why didn't you have a black and white on the back street behind it? You had a surveillance car, a tracking car, so when the father came out with the truck to go anywhere and might have had Brian in the back seat, you could have followed him and maybe seen what he was doing. Now you're spending hundreds of thousands of dollars to look in the swamp with every ATV, and I'm from Florida, and I love the Florida law enforcement. They're great, and they're looking out there. But how the hell did this guy get out of the house? Because he got out of the house before you guys got on the scent. Before the parents told him and filed the report that Gabby was missing.
6 days.
He's had a huge head start on the cops.
6 days they've been searching that swamp with five agencies, including the feds, five agencies, including, the FBI in particular. OK, John, I'm going to go to break. But when we come back, there are several different routes that Brian Laundrie, or I'm assuming now he did come back. We weren't sure if he came back to Florida. We thought maybe somebody drove him back. But now the neighbors say they saw him. They're the first people to put him in Florida. But there are several different routes that Google Maps will drive you from where he was in Wyoming to Northport, Florida. When we come back, I'm going to show you all three of these routes, including the ones with tolls and cameras and the ones without, and all the states that they go through. And maybe you and I together can appeal to the people in those states. Look at all your devices because maybe he drove by you. John Walsh is still with us after the break. We'll be right back. Welcome back to our special coverage of the Gabby Petito homicide investigation and the hunt for her fiancé, Brian Laundrie. The host of Investigation Discoveries in Pursuit, John Walsh, is with me. Okay, John, I want to take you through the various different ways Brian Laundrie may have made it back from Florida, just to get the timeline right, because that's what's going to really matter when it comes to investigating who killed her and how she died. So we checked Google Maps, and let me start with the first route that we found, John. It takes 35 hours without traffic. It goes along I-75 South. It's 2,363 miles. It goes through these states. You ready? Wyoming, Nebraska, Missouri, Illinois, Tennessee, Georgia, and Florida. So viewers, look at that route. If it goes by your state, make sure you look at any of the cameras you may have or any of the driving cameras you may have driven with. Now, route two is a little different. It takes 36 hours, again, without traffic. It's 2,403 miles, and it covers these states: Wyoming, Nebraska, Missouri, Arkansas, Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, and finally Florida. And then the third route, John, takes 36 hours without traffic. It covers 2,482 miles, and it takes the driver through Wyoming, Colorado, Kansas, Oklahoma, Arkansas, Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, and Florida. And another really important note about these routes, John, there's 9 tolls along the way. Those can be a boon to police, John, because, you know, cameras at the toll booths, cameras at bathrooms and restaurants and gas stations, and viewers, all the viewers who live along that route. Are your tips pouring in?
Yesterday, our hotline doubled the calls. Our webpage, where people can text me, our homepage, doubled. And we had 10 good tips yesterday, of which we turned over to authorities. Marshals are at the show. FBI is at the show. And so they've been spent all day going through those tips. So I think it's great that you outlined the maps, and people got to come forward. We need the timeline. I think he just meandered back to Florida. He's such a sociopath. He took his time. Once he got home, as the neighbor said, he saw them. He saw the father and Brian going in and out of that new camper, that camper shell that was on the red truck, and packing up. So he had plenty of time to scrub the van. Trust me, I don't think the FBI found anything in that van. They were a dollar short, a dollar too late. And I don't think they found anything in the house, because Brian and the dirty laundry mom and dad had plenty of time to scrub the house and to scrub the van. But we also, I'm telling the FBI and the marshals, you should get a computer-generated picture of the red truck with the camper, white camper top on, and let's get the public to tell us where he dropped Brian off. That's important. Where did he go in that, with that pickup truck, with that camper shell, mom and dad, the dirty laundries, and their son, and where did they go around wherever they dropped him off, because they were only gone for 3 days? That would be a great, good start to start looking for him. And I'm telling you, I'm begging people, because people have advanced this case all along the way. That travel blogger pointed out his van where he dumped Gabby. And then he had to walk back to the van. He got picked up and taken the wrong way. He was 7 miles from where he dumped her. Then the people who picked him up when he was hitchhiking came forward. People in the restaurant that he was being so terrible to. The public is building this case. The public is breaking this case wide open. And I don't know why nobody talked to those neighbors, but I was sitting there on Fox Live and looking at these two neighbors saying, how the hell didn't the cops ask you if he ever went out of the driveway with that truck? Not only did he go out with the truck, he had a brand new camper van on it. But that was before Gabby's parents enlisted her missing.
Well, and so, let's be honest,
anyway,
we don't know if they were interviewed. It's true. We just don't know if they were interviewed by police, and we didn't see it. And they had told police that. But they said they've shared that information with the police now anyway. The other thing I wanted to ask you about, John, and this is, there's two investigations going on here, right? Where is this guy, based out of the Northport home? And then let's make sure that we get enough evidence in the killing, which eventually could end up as a murder of Gabby Petito, so that we can actually convict someone for it. And to that end, all of the social media reports around where they were last seen together and then when, you know, Brian was seen alone, there's something very curious that I want to ask you about after the break. And think about this, okay? A social media presenter sees Brian Laundry and Gabby in a restaurant arguing, I think on the 27th, right? But on the 27th, he is seen alone back at the campsite. He's also at the campsite on the 26th. So it is possible that they were at the campsite together at the 26th. They came to the restaurant and had a fight. Something might have happened. And he goes back to that campsite and he's seen by social media followers. And he's seen alone. And that's the spot where the body is found. So there might be a lot to that. So I just need to figure out, do we get another chance to see John Walsh or is he going to leave us?
No, I'm good.
Rats, I knew it. I knew you were a busy guy, though. No, I promised your producers that I'd keep you for only three blocks. So
No.
But listen,
Ashley, I can stay. I can stay. Go to your commercial and come back.
Okay, right back with John Walsh. Back with me, John Walsh. All right, John. So the TikTokers and YouTubers have told us that Brian Laundry was seen alone at the campsite where that body was found. But that was on August 26th. On August 27th, the social media folks say that they saw both of these two together, possibly at a restaurant arguing with a waitress. Then on the 27th later at night, he spotted again, or at least that van is spotted alone at the campsite where the body is found. I've got 1 minute. Tell me what that tells you.
It probably tells you, you know, I thought that he probably killed her, you know, pretty soon after the police stop, and that he knew that there was a police video of him and some problems with law enforcement, like all cowards and a domestic abuser. He maybe thought it was time to shut her up because she was going to tell somebody and somebody eventually would believe how terrible she treats him. So he killed her there. And, you know, the pathologist took a lot of time today. And if I talked to pathologists, I would say to him, forensic pathologist, take all the time in the world. Don't make any mistakes because you're going to be crucial at that trial. If you need to keep working on Gabby for 4 or 5 days, you don't have to hurry it because the media is bugging you for why she got killed and how she got killed and all the other BS. You're going to be a main witness to what happened to her and an expert in that trial. Take your time. Let us find out how he killed her. And we're building, you know, it's people like you, Ashley, that are building and filling it in. It's the social media people that care. That's how I've caught the world's most wanted and find missing children, because people care. And if you give them a vehicle, you can call me. I don't trace calls. I don't tap calls.
I know I've kept you longer than I was supposed to. Your producers and I made a deal with you, and I've got a train running. But listen, your show is on tonight. I want you to keep me posted, John Walsh, on how many tips and how well you do. I know you're the man for the job. Thank you for this. John Walsh, the host of In Pursuit with John Walsh on Investigation Discovery and streaming on Discovery Plus. Thank you, sir.
Glad to be on, Ashley.
All right. Okay. Tomorrow, no fewer than 5 law enforcement agencies are going to converge once again on that massive 25,000-acre swamp known as the Carlton Reserve. It's just south of Sarasota, Florida. That is the last reported location of Brian Laundry. And as you've heard, that report comes from his parents. And that report comes 3 days after he supposedly went there. So for what it's worth, are they even supposed to be there? I want to talk more about the search for Gabby Petito's fiancé with a former New York prosecutor, a former FBI special agent, and a former FBI profiler, all of whom happen to be Jim Clemente. Jim, I am frustrated every time I see those hardworking 5 agency officers out there in the muck and the mess, in the heat and the wet mud with alligators, thinking that they're all there because of what Brian Laundry's parents told them. And now we find out tonight that zinger, that they bought a camper about a week after Brian showed up in Florida and they went off for the weekend. What do you make of that?
Well, it's possible, and that they took him somewhere, thinking they were helping him in some way. And it's also possible that they went on a family vacation. Well, the investigation will tell us one way or the other. We will definitely be able to determine whether he's with them, whether they dropped him off or not. That's something that's going to come out. But I think if you look at Laundrie's past behavior, he actually was at the site where Gabby's body was found. And he left the van there and he hitchhiked away from there. So he used a vehicle to sort of put law enforcement off his scent in the past. So I believe that that may have been happening with his Mustang at the Florida Preserve. He may have placed it there and then gone off in another direction. That just seems to be his pattern of behavior.
So, Jim, this is something that is really remarkable, and it's kind of one of those in this day and age comments. But one of our producers, Sabrina Delmonico, found that the hashtag Gabby Petito was viewed more than, are you ready? 800 million times just on TikTok, just on one platform. That hashtag was seen 800 million times. That has to be just an incredible resource for officers who are tracking someone in a manhunt now that the social media brigade is on it and they are looking and they are sharing.
Yeah, absolutely. The fact that almost everyone in this country has a phone with a camera that can take videos means that there are probably many people out there who don't even realize that they may have evidence that will help solve this case, figure out what actually happened to Gabby Petito.
One other question for you. We all know that Brian Laundrie is an avid camper. We even heard one of the TikTokers, the social media folks, saying, you know, he was in the back of my car and he said he was going to sleep out there on just a tarp. And I thought, well, that sounds a lot like a guy named Eric Rudolph. I mentioned it last night. I'm going to mention it again. Eric Rudolph was out in the wild for 5 years after the Olympic Park bombing and the Alabama abortion clinic bombing. He was caught behind a dumpster. So I think we've got a picture of the moment that, or at least the dumpster, where Eric Rudolph came foraging for food. And this is why I want to ask you as an FBI profiler. How important is it now for people to be vigilant around certain sites because someone who's out on his own eventually needs help?
Right. I think it's incredibly important because he's going to need food. He's going to need fresh water. He's going to need some help to do this. I don't think he's that sophisticated a criminal that he's going to be able to go off the grid and stay there for any period of time. Eric Rudolph was a totally different type of person. He was a survivalist. Although Laundrie did seem to like to camp, he was not somebody who ever practiced being off the grid for a period of time. So I think he's going to screw up. He's going to reach out to somebody. He's going to go dumpster diving. He's going to be begging for food. He's going to be trying to make some money so he can buy food and actually travel as well. I think he's going to be found sooner rather than later. I'd be very surprised if it went a number of weeks after right now.
I've got only a couple seconds left, but I have to get you on this as well. Those parents have not once appealed to the public to help find their missing son. 8 days he's apparently been missing, according to the story that Mr. and Mrs. Laundrie tell. And yet not one of those 8 days or any of the hours in between have they gone out and said to the media, help us find our son, we're so worried. What does that tell you?
Well, it's very suspicious behavior if they actually believe he is missing. It tells me that it's a possibility that they know where he is or at least the condition that he's in. And obviously, all that's going to come out if that's the case. Hopefully, it's not the case. We want to believe that they care about the fact that Gabby is now dead. Somebody that lived in their own home is now dead of a homicide. I hope that that changes their mind and they actually cooperate fully now.
Have you, in all your years of doing the work you do, come across a family whose loved one is missing, who never says a word? They don't tell police for a couple of days. They never appeal to the public. They never cry or fear. Does this appear to you to be a mother and father who are so incredibly concerned about their missing son?
Well, what I'll tell you is it's very unusual circumstances. It is not the common behavior that we see in parents that are worried about their missing son.
I would say it might be the weirdest thing I've ever seen. I've covered hundreds of missing people, and their loved ones are begging to get on camera. They are begging to be on television. They are begging anyone who will listen to help them find their loved one, especially a loved one in peril in that terrible swamp that they said he went off hiking. So I smell a rat when it comes to that. They've never come out once and said, help us find our boy, and here's his picture. They've just left us to, you know, comb his social media while his parents, begging for their attention, also are ignored. So, Jim Clemente, thank you for your expertise. Let's get together again. I want to see where we go with this, because every day yields another strange clue, and I know that that changes your path as well. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you.
Still ahead tonight, Brian Laundrie may be the focus of Gabby Petito's homicide investigation, but he is not the only one who could pay a hefty price for whatever happened or happens between Gabby's killing and the moment Mr. Laundrie turns up. The odds are he's going to turn up. A South Florida prosecutor turned defense attorney joins me after the break with the laundry list of charges and offenses that these people just might face. A whole lot of time and money and police resources are being spent this week trying to find a person who isn't even charged with a crime, not even a misdemeanor. Brian Laundrie is, for the moment, what investigators call a person of interest in the killing of his fiance, Gabby Petito. And I say killing, not murder, because it isn't murder yet either. And if and when he's found, he may well face a bundle of charges, and he may not be the only one facing charges. I want to dig into some legal matters now with Mark Eiglars, who's a South Florida trial lawyer and former Miami-Dade prosecutor, an old friend of mine. So, Mark, boy, oh, boy, I keep hearing about what the laundries have been up to, and I'm like, I'm ticking off the laundry list, pardon the pun, of charges and exposures that they might face if, in fact, they've been sending police on a wild goose chase. Walk me through it.
Well, I was hoping that they could be charged with being an accessory after the fact, assuming they assisted him and knew that he had done something nefarious. I just checked the statute again, and I was mistaken. There's exceptions for parents. If you're a parent, if you are a husband or wife of another, that charge doesn't seem to apply. However, let's say they tampered with evidence in any way. Aha, no exception for mom or dad on that one. They could be facing up to 5 years in prison as a third-degree felony here in Florida.
Okay, Mark, what about obstruction of justice if, in fact, the house is where Brian Laundrie was and they said he went off to the woods, but he went off 4 days ago and he never, ever went off to the woods, and they find instead that he's gone somewhere else and they drove him?
I like that one, too. That could work. And again, we're speculating here. As a defense lawyer, Yes. Let me just throw out, maybe they limited what they knew from him. One of these, I don't want to know, I don't want to know. Or maybe he indicated somehow that things weren't good, but never really shared with them precisely what he was up to. That could be the case.
Do you think people are usually smart enough to, when they see their son drive up after months and months of being away, to say, I don't want to know, don't tell me anything, don't tell me anything. They're not lawyers, right? I get that you right. know it, you know right away, you can smell it a mile away and you stop, you know, the clients from talking. But what about false statements? I mean, if, in fact, this guy was off camping and they left him camping and then said, he's off in the woods and I hope you rack up a couple million dollars in search bills.
Yeah, here's my take on that, okay? I am a father of three, and I don't want to point my finger outward because I got three pointing back at me. If I was placed in that position, I candidly don't know what I'd do. I know I'd want to preserve my son's life or my daughter or my other son. That said, what these people are doing, assuming they knowingly sent police on the wrong direction in a goose chase or did what they did, I have no problem with them being prosecuted for the crimes, for the choices that they're making. For every action, there's a reaction. You're doing that to law enforcement, you deserve to be punished.
You're doing that to law enforcement. We're paying the tab for it because this will end up being millions. We're at day six of this search right now. And then there's the whole notion there's another family up in New York. They're desperate. They haven't heard from their daughter. They only want you to just help them find her. And you say nothing. Now, I know that's not a crime, but can it be a civil suit?
Interesting. Can it be a civil suit? Theoretically, yes. Anything can be a civil suit. It's not going to happen. It just won't. I like it. You get points on a law school exam for spotting that. But I just don't think in reality that's going to happen.
Oh, man, I see pain and suffering and emotional distress all over this, especially if they're charged with a crime. I go after them and say, and your crimes caused this for us. But, you know, look at me. Okay, the other thing is, what about conspiracy? Is there any kind of conspiracy that you can sniff out on this?
Everything hinges upon the facts, right? We just don't know. We don't know what went on in that household. And as a defense lawyer, sometimes things look a certain way and they're not. I'd hate to be part of the pitchfork group that wants to throw the parents under the bus. But let's play along with the Ashley Banfield. They possibly might be guilty. If they together came to an agreement with their son who committed something like a murder, and then took acts in furtherance of that, then sure, they conspired. Let's get them.
Yeah, but I'll tell you what, I'm not the Pitchfork Nation either, and I don't like that. But what I have seen in the behavior of these parents and the distress that it's caused everyone around them, this is morally reprehensible, just morally reprehensible. And I am going after them with my moral pitchfork. Yeah.
No, let me say this. The court of public opinion is very different than a court of law. There is no presumption of innocence in the court of public opinion. And the burden of proof could be, I just think that they're guilty. Everybody's free to do that. The First Amendment gives you that wide latitude. And I'm right there with you. I don't put on my defense lawyer hat when I'm looking at this family. I believe that they knew what was going on. And I believe most likely they are morally responsible for some of the predicament that we're in right now, if not a lot of it.
Yeah. Mark, I appreciate it. I want to have you back, especially since you're right there in Florida. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. Also want to let our viewers know that tomorrow night, a special edition of Banfield is going to air on the Gabby Petito case. Several others in recent years that were tragically similar took similar hold of hearts and minds of the nation. Elizabeth Vargas, Diane Diamond, Mark Garrigo, Steve Halling. Hold of hearts and minds of the nation. Elizabeth Vargas, Diane Diamond, Mark Garrigo, Steve Halling. We'll see you tomorrow night at 10.